Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous.
This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay. Mandy.
Yes.
Are you ready for one hell of a story about an extraordinary woman?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, the woman I've chosen for this week's Women's History Month episode, she didn't create new laws or blaze a trail in a career for women to follow. But she did refuse to settle for an ordinary, boring life or the basics. This woman lived a life of crime that started from the 1960s all the way to 2017 when she was 87 years old.
Damn.
This is the story of the globe-trotting, notorious jewel thief, Doris Payne.
Doris Payne, for me, is someone who manipulates people. That's her job.
If you know the jewelry robbery world, she certainly would be in the Hall of Fame.
Payne admits to stealing expensive diamonds from all around the world, including Paris, Monaco, and Tokyo.
A notorious jewel thief has struck again.
She's so famous, her life story is about to become a movie starring Halle Berry.
Doris is a protagonist and the antagonist in the screenplay that Doris Payne writes herself every day.
When I'm preparing to go on a campaign, I'm preparing to play the part of somebody else.
I've taken a 10.5 carat out of Monte Carlo.
The Cartier? Wow.
There's never been a day that I went to steal that I did not get what I went to do.
When I go shopping with Doris, I tell her, if you take anything, let me know. And I'd say, put that back. If she sees something she wants, she will go and get it. And me, you, humans wouldn't stop her from doing it.
It is time for her to go to prison. It is time for her to pay that price.
I just want you to watch what the jury is going to see. They want you to plead guilty to burglary, take 3 years in state prison.
Absolutely. This is a matter of the People versus Doris Payne. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do right now. I can be persuaded.
I don't have any regrets about stealing jewelry. I'm great at cook.
Doris Payne was born in October of 1930 in Slab Fork, West Virginia. This town was a big mining town, as most towns in that area were at the time. It being the 1930s, things were tough. But for Doris, it was even harder. Her father was black, and her mother was a member of the Cherokee Nation. So we have the whole racist aspect going on that definitely had an impact on Doris's life. She was the second youngest of six. She described her and her siblings as stair-step children, by which she meant that the age gap between each of them was about the same. Her father was a coal miner, of course, and he was said to be pretty abusive to her mom, sometimes even violently beating her. Doris said about this quote, "It wasn't an everyday thing that my father beat my mother, but she was a prisoner. He didn't want her talking to any men, and he didn't want her talking and gossiping with other women." She further said, quote, "This taught me early in life that abusers try to isolate you." So growing up, seeing this, Doris was determined to make sure that her life was not going to be isolated by a man. Which I feel like we can all get that.
Yes.
But what exactly was it that led Doris to become a jewel thief? Well, Doris was said to be a very bright and good student. And when she was 13, her mother had told her as a reward for getting straight A's that she was going to buy her a watch. So Doris took her money and went down to a little general store in her town. Doris knew the owner, of course. And so he shows her all the watches that he has, and he's nice to her. He always is. But then another customer comes into the store, a white customer. This person begins to, you know, give Doris looks and treat her poorly, even ignoring her, practically ignoring her, just giving her, you know, dirty looks because she's not just a little kid. Anyway. So, of course, she gets really upset because she's only 13. The store owner does not comfort her. He doesn't defend her. Instead, he tries to hustle her out of the store. And in doing so, he forgets that Doris was wearing one of the watches that he had been showing her.
Oh, shit.
But she doesn't take it. She walks back into the store, kind of like a fuck you kind of way, and tells the owner, you know, by the way, you forgot your watch. Kind of telling him, hey, you know, I could have just taken this, but instead I brought it back despite the way that you treated me.
Right.
So even though it was kind of a fuck you to the owner, because his behavior really hurt her, because before this, the two had had a close relationship, she felt betrayed. She takes it further by describing this as the thing that had made her decision to, quote, go to war with jewelry salesmen. This one event is where things changed for Doris. So first she has to make sure that she can accomplish what she did by mistake on purpose. So she and a friend takes a bus to Cleveland and walks into Woolworths. Doris starts looking and trying on watches, makes friendly conversation with the salesman until he's forgotten how many watches he's taken out and let her try on. Then she and her friend walk off with a watch hidden inside of her glove. Since she's just testing things out and seeing how she can do it, she turns around and returns the watch. The man at the counter thanks her, and the two girls leave. In her autobiography, Doris says, quote, when we got to the street, we ran and cackled like two witches who had stolen the heart out of the chest of the king's firstborn son. We were as high as we could be. We were secretly in control of the white man.
Damn.
Right? And this is exactly where Doris is going to get her power from. So we're going to skip forward to Doris in her teens. The abuse that her father gives her mother has now become more and more violent. Knowing that in order for her mother to escape her father, she needs money. And so Doris leans into her success as a jewel thief and steals a diamond that she then pawns and gives her mother the money. Together, Doris and her mother move to Cleveland while her father stays behind in Slab Fork. Doris then goes on to have two children, one at 18 and another at 22. Unfortunately, though, their father had took custody, and it doesn't really seem like Doris was really a part of their life until they were older for some reason. Doris's mother is a very talented seamstress, so she finds work doing this, while Doris finds work as a nurse in a nursing home there in Cleveland. They both find better lives and basically reinvent themselves there. A few years later, in the late 1950s, she isn't really stealing anything unless it's like out of necessity. But one of her co-workers confides in her that her mother is in need of medication and she can't afford to pay for it. So Doris comes up with a plan. On one of their lunch breaks, she and her friend go to a department store. Doris dresses her friend, who is white, in a beautiful dress that Doris's mother made, while she herself stays in her nursing uniform. She tells her friend to, quote, slump over a bit like one of those wavy Victorian heiresses. The way she talks, I love it. They tell the clerk that Doris's friend will soon be engaged, and they're there to go ring shopping, and that Doris is her nurse. Okay, so basically Doris's storyline is that her friend is an ill heiress who is set to marry a man who is no doubt only after her family's money, and it works. While the salesman is distracted, Doris slips a diamond wedding ring set into her pocket. The friend then swoons over, and Doris is all, oh my, you know, she isn't feeling well, I've got to get her out of here, we'll just come back another day, and then they walk out of the store. Doris then pawns the ring set for $1,500. In today's money, that would be about $19,643.
Oh, shit.
She then gives her friend the money that she needs for her mother's medication. And Doris uses some of the profit to buy herself a new expensive handbag and a different diamond ring. So now Doris looks like a wealthy married woman who has all the time in the world to walk around shopping in jewelry shops. And no one questions why she's there or even bats an eye at her. So basically, she used the money from her last death to create the costume so that way she didn't have to depend on anyone to pull this off. Then she quits her job at the nursing home. Now is when she hones in on her technique. So her method is this. First, she researches the piece that she wants. She does this by looking at ads in magazines like, you know, Town and Country, Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, you know, all those. So she never walks into a jewelry store not knowing what she's going to take. This gives her an idea of how she should dress and act as well. She stakes out department stores and watches how the wealthy woman dress and act in order to match that persona. Doris said, quote, "When I'm preparing to go on a campaign, I'm preparing to play the part of someone else. I'm camouflaging myself. You have to look your part. You have to look like you belong. I have to behave so well-bred that they would have no idea who I am. I'm sure that they don't see me as a Black American woman who just walked in." Once Doris feels like she's ready, she walks into the store, asks the clerk to view multiple pieces. Once each of the pieces are pulled out, Doris moves them around and tries them on, and she talks and asks questions about each one of the pieces, all of that. She's doing the whole, like, look over here, not here thing. Kind of like the cup trick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put something in the cup, you move it around. She's doing that whole thing. So she moves it all around, asks questions, distracts the clerk. So that way they can't remember exactly how many pieces were taken out to begin with. While the clerk is distracted, Doris takes a piece of the jewelry. Then once the clerk has refocused on her and what's going on, she's all like, oh no, where'd the other piece go? So then, of course, they start looking for it. And Doris is like, oh, here it is. Hands it to the clerk as if she had just found it. The clerk thanks her. He's grateful. And now believes that Doris is an honest and trustworthy woman. This causes the clerk to then relax and become friendlier and less uptight. This is when Doris takes the piece that she actually wants.
She's smart.
So Doris does it in a way that the clerk is going, you know, because he's like, oh, well, she found this missing piece. Why would she then turn around and steal another one? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So she also knew that she couldn't keep selling her stolen jewelry to pawn shops because they could only give her so much. She would not get top dollar for her stolen bounty. So through word of mouth, Doris had gotten in contact with a broker named Harold Braunfeld. Harold was a Jewish nightclub owner known to everyone as Babe. He had connections in the jewelry industry, and throughout the 60s, he and Doris were a team. She stole the pieces, and he sold them. Using Babe's connections to actual jewel buyers, Doris was able to get top dollar for her pieces. Babe also advised Doris to not take anything that was too valuable because that would cause the piece to become too hot of an item to sell. The years that Doris spent working with Babe were both informative and very profitable. So sometime during their partnership, Doris headed out to L.A. Babe spent that time flying to L.A. to collect the items from Doris that she had stolen, then flying back to Cleveland to sell those pieces. So while in L.A., Doris got her hands on some pretty pricey pieces. One day, she visits a Rodeo Drive boutique where she steals two diamond rings, which at the time were worth $20,000.
Wow.
Today, those rings would be worth about $213,000.
Holy shit.
Could you imagine that much money just basically being handed to you?
That's insane.
And then remember, Babe had told Doris not to take anything too valuable. So those two rings weren't even the most expensive pieces.
Right.
So Doris does eventually return to Cleveland, and when she does, she sold everything she had stolen in L.A. to an amount that she was able to afford to buy a home in the ritzy, high-priced suburb area of Shaker Heights, which is in Cleveland. It's basically like a, you know, suburb inside Cleveland. The home cost was the exact amount that she had gotten from those two rings in L.A. alone.
Wow.
She didn't want to advertise that she had that kind of money. For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So she got a normal mortgage, but for Doris, who was a Black woman in the 90s, this wasn't an easy thing to accomplish. In the end, Doris again had sought out the help of her partner, Babe, who had actually sold some of Doris's pieces to a bank manager. So I'm not exactly sure what Babe does or does not say to this bank manager, because obviously who's going to admit to a bribe?
Mm-hmm.
But after whatever Babe did or did not do, this guy approves Doris for a mortgage. It's kind of one of those, you know, friends in high places things. So what I haven't told you yet is that Doris up to this point has been arrested a few times. But like the rest of her life, throughout the rest of her story, her charges are either dropped or she's given short sentences. Because even though they know she's the thief, not one time at all does any authority find any stolen diamonds on Doris.
How do they not find it?
I will tell you about one case where they don't find it here in just a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So at some point, Doris went on to meet a man named Kenneth, and the two were immediately smitten with each other, and they began a serious relationship. This new relationship had caused the one between Doris and Babe with sour. He had apparently become very jealous, even though he was married to a woman that was not Doris. So I don't know if there was something going on between the two of them or not, but for whatever reason, he ended up jealous and they kind of cut ties. And then shortly after that, Babe dies. Doris and Kenneth go on to have a long-term relationship. Kenneth is very much aware of the life that Doris leads, but he never got involved in it in any way. He just kind of waits for her to come back to Cleveland while she goes and travels the country and eventually the world. So as a side note here, I love this. Love it. So the trips that Doris goes on when she sells these jewels, they could really be called anything, but most people call them jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doris calls hers her campaigns. I love that so much.
Her campaigns.
Yes. Okay, so by the early 70s, Doris is about 40, and the jig is up. The Jewelers Security Alliance, which is a trade group, is now on to Doris and sends out a bulletin to be on the lookout to other jewelers that gives a description of Doris and tells them of her technique. So Doris decides here that it's time for her to see Europe. So she hits the road. So one would think that Doris, now in her 40s and having to leave her country, she would give up her life of crime. But her jewel thief ways to rest and live a normal, quiet life, right?
You would think.
Well, that one would be wrong. On one campaign in Europe, Doris had, quote, a field day in a jewelry store in Zurich. Then she went back to her hotel, where she laid low until night fell. She's getting ready to cross the border into France, but she first decides she's going to go dancing. So she's out here, you know, dancing, having a good old time at this nightclub, right? What Doris doesn't know is that while she's out here enjoying herself, this nightclub has cameras. Cameras that are being broadcast onto Swiss TV. So last call rolls around. The lights come on. Police have filled the nightclub there to arrest Doris. Someone had seen and identified her. But it wasn't just anyone. Sitting at home with his wife, watching the club on TV, was a policeman. Like, first of all, who the fuck just sits at home watching people dance in a nightclub live feed?
For fun.
Like, does that? Okay, anyway. Sitting at home with his wife, watching the club on TV, was a policeman who was working the jewelry store robbery case. And who does he see come across his TV screen? None other than the woman they were looking for, Doris Payne herself, even if they didn't yet know her name. According to Doris, the police then put her on a train to Geneva, where more policemen were waiting for her to arrive. Okay, so they put Doris on this train by herself to Geneva. No policemen escorted her. They did this because the train was supposed to be a non-stop train, straight to Geneva. But the train did stop, briefly, to load some water. And what does Doris do?
She escapes.
She nopes right the fuck out of there. She jumps right out of the train window. She jumps out of the train window, runs through farmland and woods, then flags down a car and hitches a ride out of Switzerland. Like, this fucking lady is iconic, dude. Like,
she really is.
I want to be her when I grow up.
No.
Okay, so, of course, everyone, you know, don't go out and be a jewel thief. But if you're gonna do it like Doris did it. Because this lady went on the fucking adventure of a lifetime. And we're nowhere even near done with her story. Like, we need better role models, okay? For sure. I'm no exception on that. But I feel like she's my new role model.
Yeah, she's good.
Okay. Anyway, so now we're in 1974, and Doris is in Monte Carlo. She's now 44 years old, and she's in her prime. She's checked into the Hotel de Paris, where she had told people that she was the wife of the famous director Otto Preminger. This guy was married, but his wife was not. His wife wasn't famous. So this lie was easy for her to pull off because no one knew who this guy's wife was. So, as normal, she dresses to fit the part. She walks into a Cartier store. She sits down with a salesman. He brings out a large section of rings all displayed on a velvet tray. So you know this place is fancy. The salesman then walks away to greet other customers. Doris stands up. She walks out of the store with a ring in her hand. Doris has just completed the biggest heist of her career. Are you ready to hear the size and the price of this ring?
Let me hear it.
She walked out of that store with a 10.5 carat diamond ring.
With a
price tag of $550,000.
Oh my God.
Today, that ring would be $3,520,948.
Could you imagine?
She walked out of that fucking jewelry store in Monte Carlo with a $3.5 million ring.
That's fucking insane. That's crazy.
I cannot tell you what the fuck I would do with that amount of money.
Right? I would be good.
My house. I wouldn't have a mortgage.
Right.
Okay. So, like I said before, this was the biggest heist Doris had ever pulled off. And once she took the ring, she didn't realize just how much it was. She just took it. Doris later said in an interview that once she learned the value of that ring, she knew that she shouldn't have taken it.
Mm.
But the value of that ring was not her only mistake. She had made three other mistakes that day. Her first was she took the ring when there was only one other person in the store. So it was very obvious that she's the one that took it.
Right.
Her second mistake was that she didn't change clothes before she left her hotel for the airport, which would have made finding her harder.
Mm-hmm.
And her last mistake was that instead of taking the first available flight out of the country, she waited for a flight to New York. So while Doris is sitting at the airport waiting for her flight, she's approached by custom agents who want to search her for the ring. All right, girl. Are you ready for something straight out of a fucking movie?
Yes.
And it does not seem real at all. But I promise you it is. So this massive ring is in the pocket of her coat when these agents approach her, right?
Mm-hmm.
She gets up and she follows them towards a room. While on the way, she grabs a tissue, puts her hands inside her pockets, and puts the ring inside the tissue.
Smart.
Then she holds the tissue up to her face, blows her nose, which is when she slips the ring into her mouth. They get to a private room. The police frisk her. And they don't find the ring anywhere. Doris goes into a coughing fit, covering her mouth naturally. She then placed the used tissue into her boot, because where else is she going to put it?
Right.
They know that Doris stole the ring, but they can't find it. They arrest her anyway, and since there's no women's jail in Monte Carlo, they take her to a hotel that overlooks the Mediterranean Sea. While she waits for her legal proceedings to begin, she then asks one of the guards outside of her room for a pair of nail clippers and a sewing kit. Which they bring to her. So why the fuck does she need this stuff? And where the hell is the ring? It's a 10.5-carat ring. What the fuck did she do with it, right? Once she's in the room, and she has her nail clippers and sewing kit, she reaches into her boot, pulls out the used tissue, which contains the ring. Doris uses the clippers to remove the diamond from the ring setting. Once the diamond is out, she steps out onto the balcony and throws the setting into the sea. Then, she sews the diamond into her girdle. Doris wears this girdle for months. Even after it's been washed and it's wet, she wears it. Like, she ain't taking no chances on losing this fucking ring.
Right.
Police never find the diamond.
That's insane. That's crazy.
Despite this, Doris is convicted and sentenced to 3 years. She's held in a low security prison, which she later said was more like a bed and breakfast than it was a prison. This prison was located in the hills of Monaco. So even though this sounds like someone's dream vacation, minus the, you know, not being allowed to leave part, Doris takes the first opportunity she gets to escape. After about 9 months, Doris fakes a stomach virus that gets her a trip to a nearby hospital. At the hospital, she keeps up the act, and then a kind nun sent her to the bathroom, where she jumps out of the fucking window. She gets into a cab, goes to France, gets a fake passport, and flies to New York. She gets back to New York, finds a buyer for the diamond that she stole in Monte Carlo on 47th Street. This buyer paid her $150,000 for the diamond, which is around $879,939 today. And remember, this is just the diamond, not the setting, because she threw it in the ocean.
Right. She's smart.
Right. So over the next 2 decades, Doris would go on to be arrested many times in both the U.S. and other countries, including Greece, France, Britain, Switzerland, but she gets away with more campaigns than she is caught. And she's never caught with what she was accused of stealing. Not one time.
Because they don't check her. They don't leave her girdle.
Or her mouth.
Right.
She often travels under an alias with fake passports. She once traveled to Tokyo, stealing jewelry from a Cartier store. Then while in her 50s, she heads to Athens, where she steals from smaller shops in the tourist district. And then she sells what she's stolen in Amsterdam. So, Doris goes on to be arrested about 20 times in countries outside the U.S., using fake names and aliases to get around, like I said. So when Doris is 52, she was again arrested in San Francisco this time. And it turns out she was wanted in multiple states and even wanted for federal charges.
Oh, shit. Damn.
She's brought to Fort Worth, Texas, where she escapes from U.S. Marshals in a similar way to how she escaped in Monte Carlo. By first being admitted to a hospital and then simply walking out.
U.S. Marshals weren't too bright, were they?
Damn, she's smart as hell.
Doris was a very beautiful woman. Like, she really was. And I think that threw everyone off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how could such a beautiful woman in her prime do all of these horrible things?
Right.
And the older Doris got, in my opinion, the more beautiful she got. Because her hair turns white, not gray. You know, she's petite. So over time, she became a beautiful, dignified, and well-spoken woman.
Right.
So, like I said, it's one of those things where people are like, there's no way. She could never do that. You know, look at her. So at the time that she walks away from her arrest in Fort Worth, she was also wanted for questioning in Geneva in connection with the disappearance of an emerald, which in 1982 was worth 90,000 Swiss francs. Or $182,724 U.S. dollars, which would amount to $597,602 today.
Damn.
As always, after this escape, Doris returned to Cleveland, where her mom and her boyfriend, Kenneth, were. Tragedy would strike Doris. She lost her mom, Kenneth, and then her best friend to cancer. And this all set off a very intense 13-year spree of thefts for her. She racks up more arrests and does more short stints in jail with more parole and probation violations as well. In 1998, Doris is 77 years old. She's older than Mama and Aunt Debbie at this point, okay? Like, she's almost as old as my great-grandma. Like, can you imagine? So, like, picture Mama a decade older out here just doing this shit. Like,
right.
It's great. So she goes flipping through an issue of Harper's Bazaar, which is a magazine. She sees an ad for a large square-cut diamond, which is located at Neiman Marcus Mall in Denver. And she says, quote, "I was on a plane before you could say boo." I love this woman so much. So Doris walks out of the store with the very diamond that they had advertised for $55,000 in 1998, which today would be around $106,492. She gets on a plane to Philadelphia where someone recognizes her and she's arrested. About this, Doris wrote in her autobiography, quote, "Fucking Interpol, fucking internet." Don't get this woman, man. She's an icon. I love her so much. She's great.
Something else.
I know.
She's my new hero.
Right? Mama was like, she's my new hero.
I know.
Go, Granny, go.
Like, don't go do this, but if you're going to do it.
Do it like she did it.
Do it the Doris way, okay? So Doris was brought back to Denver where she's charged and convicted. She serves 5 years in prison, which is the longest stint in prison she's ever done. By this time, Doris is famous within the Jewel community as well as the regular public. Media has caught wind of her life, and there's a lot to write about when it comes to Doris. She made herself into the jewel thief expert. And according to the documentary about her, once she was released, store owners would have her come into their shops and show them how she did it in order to watch for thieves.
Oh, wow.
Like, she's having a huge deal by the time she gets out of prison. And everyone everywhere wants to know and see Diamond Doris. So now we're going to jump ahead to 2011. To the world, Doris, at 81 years old, with her white hair and frail appearance, looks like a sweet little old lady. But once again, she is found guilty of yet another store theft and is sentenced to 5 years in a California prison. This time, Doris walked into a Macy's in San Diego and stole a ring listed at $8,900, which today in 2025 would be about $12,487. By this time that she had walked into the California mall, Doris had stolen an estimated amount of $2 million. And she said that she spent most of that, and she has went through most of her savings. Her Shaker Heights home was eventually foreclosed on. Doris, at this point in her life, she had 32 aliases, 11 social security numbers, and 9 passports.
Jesus.
After her release, she is again arrested in 2016 at 86 years old for stealing a $2,000 bracelet. For this, she was given 3 years probation. Her last major brush with the law came in 2017 when she was caught in a Walmart parking lot for stealing $89 worth of goods.
At Walmart?
Yeah.
Okay.
In court, she promised the judge she wouldn't flee and would commit no further crimes, and so he released her. And since, she's had a few minor brushes with the law, but nothing major, just as she had promised. Today, Doris is 95 years old and a free woman. She has offered no advice to anyone that may be interested in doing what she did. She stated about her arrest that came from committing her series of crimes was that sometimes getting caught was part of the job.
She would have been so fun to know.
I know. I feel like we would have been best friends.
I know.
Still today, Doris is not sorry for the theft she committed. As always, she remains unapologetic. And that is the story of the notorious jewel thief, Doris Payne, and her catch me if you can criminal career.
I like that one.
I love her so much.
Yeah. She's awesome.
So good.
And she's smart.
Yeah. What? There are people nowadays that can't get away with walking
across the freaking street and get arrested.
Right.
They can't walk out of Walmart with a tube of chapstick. This lady stole like over $2 million worth of jewelry.
And escaped.
Yeah. Escaped. What did I say? Three times?
Yeah.
She's my hero.
She jumped out of a fucking train window. Oh, God. Then the window of a hospital. Oh.
That's hilarious.
Like, this lady came straight out of a movie. I shit you not.
Oh, she did.
Oh, so good.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yep, I love that one. Where did I don't remember where I heard this one at. It's so good. Oh. Yep, I was like, I have to do that one. Because it's so good.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad you did.
Okay. That was a short one, but I felt like it was.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right. Anything else before we sign off?
No, I like that one.
All right. Two more weeks, two more episodes.
All right.
The next one is a really good one, too.
Yep. Nice.
And then the last episode, I think I'm going to do two women in it, like I did last month. Because I can't decide which one I want to do.
Right.
So I think I'm just going to do both.
Nice.
Because they're both so good.
Right.
All right. We'll be back next week for another episode, another woman to talk about. As always, our sources and photos for the episode can be found on the Facebook page. You can find that link in the episode description. Give us a rate and a review. Don't forget to subscribe so you get notifications when these new episodes air. We hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters
and don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.